Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I'm not going to take off my shirt, Pete.
I'll get one of our other friends to do that, if that's the case.
It would not be out of character. You do party and have a good time.
I do.
So I feel like
you could
usually
pull it
off. Not the shirt off guy.
That's true.
But
you never know. You get one extra drink in me, maybe I will be.
Oh, yeah, baby, that's right. Kansas City Chiefs got Taylor Swift. The 49ers might have Chris Sims. Very comparable. Absolutely. Actually not. Not even comparable, okay? I'm still not the shirt off guy. That's not happening. I'm the guy that, like, entices the guy that might be the shirt off guy. I'm the guy that stirs the pot. I'm the guy that goes, here, have this drink one more, and then take your shirt off and do that. That's what I am.
Like, you've been working out. Take it off. Let everyone see
okay,
it.
Okay,
like,
maybe, really, maybe one day. Maybe I've been doing that CrossFit. Maybe I'll get there one day.
Yeah. Maybe I'm that guy. Maybe I'm the guy that induces the guy to take his shirt off.
Maybe you're that guy, or are you the guy that takes the shirt off? I don't know.
I usually...
It does seem like a hairy chest thing kind of thing, and you have a hairier chest than me, so maybe it's you.
I do. I usually do not take my shirt off. Yeah, Pete wants to know how you know that about my chest.
Well, I've seen little things down there.
Popping out in the...
like under the collar or something, right? I've seen it there. And I know that I have no hair there, and therefore he has a little there, and he has more. And I don't know what the rest looks like. You're right.
You do the pod together for, you know, how many years? 5 years that we've done it. You learn these things about each other.
Right, exactly. I mean, you have to shave down the lower part of your neck a little bit, don't you?
Here a little
bit? Yeah. I don't even have to shave
down
there.
I don't go onto the chest, though, and that's why I get
you're not
the things...
connecting yet?
I'm not connecting yet.
If you're connecting, let me know, because I'd like to make fun of you more
soon,
when you start to connect.
Soon, but not yet. Well, you say you're not a shirt-off guy, but Pete has created something. You know,
great.
Art But Make It Sports, you know, that whole account. Yeah. We have Art But Make It Sims. And so this is a Renaissance rendition of the time that Chris sees a crazy touchdown from the suite in Santa Clara watching the 49ers in the conference championship game.
Wow. I got a drink in my hand. Am I blowing smoke out of my mouth there, too?
That
is
smoke.
Okay. Yep.
This is called the smoker. Adrian Brower, 1636.
That's what I would be doing if they would allow me and it was legal and you could actually smoke weed in a stadium. I would love to sit in a suite, Santa Clara.
If there's any stadium you can do it, it's out in the Bay Area.
You're probably right. I mean, I'm not going to do it in the suite, right? I mean, that's not going to happen. unfortunately, I'm not going to go. It just became too much. It became too much. Honestly, the flight situation and then figuring that out with work and everything else became daunting, annoying. And I just was like, yeah, okay, it's too much. And I couldn't piece it all together. So I said the hell with it, which was disappointing to me. But nonetheless, I'll be on the couch watching the game and you know who I'll be rooting for in our 49ers-Lions matchup.
How dare you?
I know.
And physically, too, for you, going from one coast to the other coast and then back in 2 days.
It would have been a lot. There's no doubt. I was willing to do it if I could get it worked out and mapped out the right way. But then when it was like, you're going to have to take a 6 a.m. flight the day before. And I was like, wait, I have to go 6 a.m. on Saturday to like basically get there? I am a big guy. I do have back problems. I want to be on first class with a flight like that.
Yeah.
So then also, like, there's no flights that have first class seats available. And then on the way back, like the only flights that were nonstop that still had first class flights or seats available were like really early in the morning, and I'd have to do PFT Live and I'd have to do our podcast that morning.
Right.
Right. So then you get into the other like late morning, early afternoon flights. Everything was a connecting if I wanted first class.
Yeah.
Right.
And really, you don't even like doing that. You're mostly private now anyway. So it's just like first
I don't know
class
if you've heard.
Even.
But yeah, I did. So when it came to that, and then it was like, oh, you're going to have to stop somewhere, and it's basically going to take you 8 or 9 hours to get home.
Yeah.
I just went, okay, that's I'm just checkmate, and hopefully I'll see them all at the Super Bowl.
Watch it in the comfort of your barn.
I know. Yeah, I'm not probably, depends how cold it is.
Oh.
Because if it's too cold, it takes a while to get the barn heated up with me making fires and having to stay on top of that.
Yeah.
So I'll see what I go. I am okay. Like, I did shift gears into what am I going to do for Sunday now, right? Like, I want to have a special day. It's the only Sunday of the whole year we get to sit on the couch and watch football,
uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, my favorite barbecue place in Texas, I'm thinking about ordering from them. Do I go Joe Stone Crabs in Florida, right? Like the famous place. You've heard of that, Joe Stone Crabs, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You can get them like
delivered
overnight, vacuum sealed, all
really?
That. And yeah, the best brisket you can get. Salt Lick, Texas. They will cook it. They will vacuum seal it. You just got to get it home. Once you get it home, you just got to reheat it. It's
wow.
ready to go, marinated. Everything's ready. You just got to kind of reheat it, whether you want to throw it on the grill or in the oven, whatever. But yes, and that's what I'm looking
so
to do.
So you were never going to San Francisco. You were dreaming about these vacuum sealed food items from Texas and Florida. Yeah, they owe us money
yeah.
now.
That Joe was our, Stone Crab, Salt Lick,
that was an
Texas.
Ad read. Yeah, that yep, was an
send
ad
your
read.
Cash to me, Christopher Sims.
All right, so we do have business to get to. This is a look ahead for two games, but you also did look at the film for the games last weekend, the divisional
yes.
games, and so you learned some new things.
Definitely.
About some of the
so.
Teams that yep. are still in it, and maybe some of the teams that are gone, and why they're gone, and maybe some of those things that the Ravens or Chiefs or 49ers or Lions can learn not to do from what the other teams did in those games. So we'll get into all that. We got the Big Butt Awards. We have Requiem for four teams that we put into the ground. So a lot to do on this conference championship preview edition of Chris Sims Unbuttoned. We'll start in the AFC. It's a 3.5-point spread. Baltimore Ravens are favored over Patrick Mahomes, who goes on the road for the second time in his NFL career. He's 1-0 in his life on the road in the playoffs. So he's an underdog again. That's from the start, that's like the weirdest thing about this game, is being like, hey, Patrick Mahomes is an underdog.
I know.
Isn't that? It just doesn't,
it doesn't
seem
sound right.
Right after all that he has done and what he did do last
yeah.
weekend.
Underdog, on the road, we're getting used to all of that. I think that's added, you know, like we were kind of saying the other day, a little more juice to their football team because this is new to them, right?
Yeah.
You know, winning playoff run, not new, but underdog on the road, wait, fuck you, how dare you do that to us? We're the Chiefs, and it gives them a little extra juice, and I think we can feel that right now. I mean, listen, you heard Mahomes after the game, right? You saw him in the locker room. Oh, they wanted it. They wished for it. They wanted us at home in the playoffs. They got it.
Yeah.
They got it. So they're embracing this challenge, and these are two teams that are both kind of chippy to begin with anyways. They don't like that how dare you make us the underdog? I mean, the last time we heard that from the Ravens was the 49ers game. Then they went out there and killed them, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, this is where, yeah, it's two chippy teams with big goals at the forefront of their mind. And, yeah, this is going to be an awesome showdown.
So it's like an underdog off. Like both
right.
teams want to claim the underdog status here.
Yeah, right.
At Greatness Calls says, will the fact that we are the underdogs as the number one seed help or hurt us versus Kansas City? Lamar and the team have been locked in, but the commanding story will be Mahomes. So Greatness Calls is saying that the Ravens are indeed the underdog.
Yeah, you're not, though. So you're not. So we can't. But you know, they're still... Will they be able to – they don't need the underdog status here, right? Greatness Calls, they don't. They know what they're dealing with. You know, we've seen all year, you've heard me say, when the Ravens seem like there's a little fear in them, that's when they've played their best.
Yeah.
You know, the teams that they played with winning records, the teams that they thought, oh, we could lose, they kind of dominated all those football teams. And last week they got scared at halftime, came out, dominated even some more. So I don't think this is one where they need disrespect. I think there's enough fear already. Wait, well, this is the defending champs. This is the team that's been to three out of the last four Super Bowls, right? Like we better be ready to go. And it's a team that we've had trouble beating in the Lamar Jackson era. So I don't think the underdog stuff and all that's going to really bother the Ravens. I think they know what they're in for here.
Patrick Mahomes in his career, and Pete, this is his career. This is not just like postseason career, obviously, right? This is just his entire career. He's only had 11 games where he's been the underdog. He is 8-3 in those 11 games.
Not shocked. Really not. I mean, we're talking about a guy that's already in GOAT territory, right? Yeah. I mean, this is as special as it gets. And, man, he goes on the road, wins this one against a team that everybody clearly looks at as the number one team in football. You know, the lure and the aura around Patrick Mahomes is only going to get bigger and better.
So they sliced and diced the Bills. They were scoring basically every possession out there.
Yeah.
Nico Waco 19, as we get into the discussion on the Chiefs offense here and what they may or may not be able to do against the Ravens. We always talk about Mahomes' big throws, but his pocket awareness is maybe the tops in the business.
Yeah.
What will he have to be careful about against this scary Ravens D? So you looked at the film of what he was able to do against the Bills defense. How many similarities are there with this Ravens defenses and how many differences?
There's not a ton of similarities. Ooh. Here. I mean, they're both very well coached and creative, right? The Ravens are, I think, far superior talent-wise, and actually I think even more versatile within their scheme, just because they have some better players, so it allows them to kind of do a few more things and color outside the lines, if you want to say a little bit, right? Yeah. You've always heard me say, like, the Bills don't want to play man-to-man. That's not what they are. They're looking to play creative zones, and McDermott's going to drop all his guys the right way. The Ravens can do everything. They can. And the Ravens also, where the Bills like were compromising the game the other day. I mean, when you watch that game back right away, you start to go, oh, yeah, Buffalo's D-line's in trouble, right? I mean, when Mahomes dropped back to pass, he didn't have to bake a cake. He could have baked two cakes, took it out of the oven, put icing on it, and put it back in the refrigerator before he threw the ball. I mean, it was incredible.
Vacuum sealed.
Exactly right. So they had no chance. From the very get-go, the first run of the football game, it is like the Bills' D-line goes back 4 yards, right? So that's going to be a different story this week, right? The Ravens, we know. Ravens play a lot of nickel defense, just like the Bills, but have different ways they can do it. And then also within that, have a huge front four, as we've discussed many a times, as big as it gets in football. I mean, they can be as big as they want. So that's where they're a little different, too. Okay, wait, so we'll play nickel. It doesn't matter. We still got huge guys up front and two awesome linebackers in the middle that we're comfortable doing it, let alone they have different versions of their nickel. They can play big nickel and put Kyle Hamilton, who's a 220-pound safety, right, down at nickel. And then, of course, it's like, well, damn, I mean, you know, there's linebackers on the Jets and some of these other teams that are 220 where you'd go, yeah, so that's what I mean. They can play nickel, but they have a lot of different ways in which they can do it and still match up and do that stuff the right way. The Chiefs are going to be a tough defend right now. The Chiefs, I've never seen them be that balanced in a football game in my life with Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. Never. One of the reasons I picked the Bills to win the game was because I just went, you know my theory. The Chiefs have been doing dumb shit all year, right? And that will continue. Usually you reveal yourself after 18 weeks. Mecole Hardman had the play where he reached out and did dumb shit. But, you know, I also thought part of the thing was that Andy wouldn't be patient enough with the run and would become a little too like, we're going to pass the ball, we're going to pass the ball, we're going to pass the ball, and that would play right into McDermott's hand. That didn't happen, and that's where the Chiefs are a different animal right now. And I think the Chiefs, like we've been talking about the last few weeks, embrace the ugliness, embrace who you are, whatever. They have done that, and they've gone into, we'll do whatever we got to do just to win the football game mode, and that's what they did the other night.
Interesting. So a couple things on that. Let me ask you first, was that your biggest disappointment with the Bills' defense? Because the defensive line, they had injuries everywhere. Secondary, linebacker, of course.
Yeah.
But the way that the Kansas City offensive line dominated the Bills' D-line.
Yeah, the D-line especially, right? That was disappointing. The D-line had a pretty good year there in Buffalo, right? It did. And you know, Daquan Jones, and we know Ed Oliver was pretty good, and Leonard Floyd, right? And other Rousseau. It's a good group. It definitely is. But as you've heard me say in years past, too, it's not the biggest, most stout group in the world either. You know, Leonard Ford's a long, skinny guy. Rousseau is kind of longer-ish, not real stout guy either, right? And then I think some of their depth behind them fell off a little bit. But, yeah, that's right. Jordan Phillips was out. He was one of their best big guys. But that's where it really hurt them. And then, yes, the backups behind them weren't as good, and they got steamrolled as well. And, you know, then you couple that with, wait, we can't stop the run. And now we might have to play man-to-man, and they don't like to do that, that's an issue.
right? The two big plays to Marquez Valdes-Scantling, they were man-to-man plays. Again, the Bills aren't good at that. That's not what they're made for.
Yeah.
And so they were really compromised. And between the injuries like you mentioned and then McDermott doing his best to trick it up and do whatever, there was just too much to overcome. There's only so much you can trick it up when you're undermanned, let alone you're playing a team that's got some schematical physical advantages on you that, you know, your coaching can only kind of make up for so many of those advantages.
So it'll be tougher for them against the Baltimore Ravens, bigger up front, and they could have an injury here. Lips Macklin Good says, what does the Chiefs offensive line do with Joe Tooney possibly out? So an MRI showed that he has a pec strain, not a tear.
Yeah.
So the status for Sunday is not definitely out, but it is up in the air right now.
Well, it's a huge deal. I mean, we know that. I mean, you know, again, this is where I've argued a little bit where it's like, you know, hey, the Bills got to improve. We know that, right? You know, you look at the Chiefs and they got like multiple all pros on both sides of the football. You look at the Bills and you go, nobody's in the all pro conversation other than Josh Allen. I mean, nobody. Right? So that's where it's like, again, where people want to blame Josh Allen and the Bills. Like, the Bills have everything. They have to get more sizzle, as we've said for the last 3 years. There's just not enough difference makers. Right? The point I was getting to, and what were you asking me
about
there?
Joe Tooney.
Oh, yeah, Joe Tooney. Where it's a big deal, of course, is, yeah, like we just talked about, the Ravens won. Yeah, we know you got to run the football, right, on them a little bit, and the Chiefs need to do that with that balance. Two, okay, the Ravens bring a lot of crazy blitzes. You'd like Joe Tooney there just because, hey, he's smart, and that's the continuity we've had all year long, right? And he's one of the best guards in football, so he's going to help sort all this stuff out. Three, you got a guy like Justin Madubuike there, right, with the Baltimore Ravens, one of the best D tackles that's pass rushes in all of football. Joe Tooney is probably the best pass-protecting guard in football, right? Mm-hmm. So when you add those things together, that's where it's a big deal. Strained pectoral, thank God. Torn, he would have been definitely done. Strain, I'm going to bet we see him play. If he doesn't play, yeah, that will be an issue, certainly. And we're going to see, you know, what they do to try to figure that out and supplant him. I would think we'd see Allegretti, who's kind of their all-purpose offensive lineman in the interior that we'll see. Was it Nick, I think?
Nick Allegretti.
Right.
Seventh-round pick in 2019, I think, or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, somewhere around there, okay. Right.
We may learn more about him coming up on Sunday. So, what were you going to say?
Well, I don't know. You want to keep staying on the Chiefs O, Ravens
yes,
D?
And I want to do that by going inside the numbers, powered by AWS. So this is something that I've heard a few people discuss on the personnel groupings that the Chiefs used here, too. Per Next Gen Stats, the Chiefs used 13 personnel. That's one running back, three tight ends, on 11 of their 47 plays in their divisional round victory over the nickel-heavy Bills, gaining 95 yards. That is almost 9 yards per play. It was their highest usage of 13 personnel since 2016.
Yeah. They dabble in it from time to time. This game was the most I've ever seen it. I think it goes into what we were saying. The injuries, the linebackers, the depth on the D-line were all in question as of late.
Mm-hmm.
And why don't we put them in a bind, right? And let's run the football because we have an advantage there, certainly. But even within that, too, like that group there, they're pretty good when you split them out to throw the football and play that angle as well. I mean, it's not like it's like, oh, man, it's three tight ends that, you know, can't do anything. Right. Oh, no, they're going to be really, you know, in a tough spot here. No, I mean, Travis Kelce and Noah Gray can run like wide receivers in a lot of ways. So that is a great element of their offense, and I think it's something they should continue to embrace. It'll be interesting to see that versus the Ravens, right? The Ravens, again, will they bend totally there in that conversation? The Ravens are a team that are going to go, wait, you want to put three tight ends in and play Smash Mouth? Where can we sign up? We're all for that. You want to play fight in a phone booth football? We're all for that. Thank you. Sign us up. I mean, so that plays right to what they want. Now, within that, did they bring in an extra linebacker? Do they go Malik Harrison and bring him in? Or do they go the big nickel aspect like I talked about? That, to me, will be something to watch, the chess match within the chess match.
Yeah.
And here's one other thing I'd add into this a little bit. I think you probably saw this in my notes. I wouldn't make a living playing Smash Mouth phone booth football against the Baltimore Ravens. That would not be the approach I would go, right? one, when you play in those tight quarters like that, we know they like that. They're big. They're physical. Their linebackers are awesome. Two, when you play in those tight quarters too, right, it makes it hard to see who's blitzing, who's what, because everybody's there, right? So you're a little bit like, I don't know, fucking all 11 guys are right here. I don't know who's fucking coming, who's dropping. Like, they're not. You don't have to disguise anything. We're all lined up in here, and they're all lined up in here with us, right? So that doesn't make it a clear picture for the quarterback all the time. That was one of the things that bothered me about the Texans game plan a little bit. Mm. They tried to do that and, like, gave themselves basically no chance in the football game. Like, the Ravens were like, oh, yeah, sure, we'll beat the shit out of you right here between the hashes. To me, when the Texans had success, and if I'm the Kansas City Chiefs, I'm spreading the field out a little bit with the Baltimore Ravens, right? We know there's not a lot of weaknesses with their football team, but pass rush with four is an issue, right? Marlon Humphrey banged up. How talented are their corners is definitely worth questioning, right? And with a guy like Mahomes and a really good offense and Andy Reid, and we know he's well taught, I think if you spread out, you're going to have a hard time tricking Mahomes. That's all I'm saying. He's at a point in his career where he doesn't get fooled by blitzes or anything like that very often. You see him like we've been talking about the last few weeks. I mean, every play is 50 even, blah, 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 blah. Check, hey, 50, ah, blah, 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 blah. I mean, it's every play. So that to me is where they could have an advantage. And then out of those sets, you can still run the football, right? You start picking them apart. See, this is where this chess match is going to be awesome, right? You don't want to play man against Mahomes because we know Andy Reid will have some pick plays and he can throw it deep and uh-oh, right? So that's a problem. But if you play zone, what we saw last week against the Buffalo Bills and where they are, and this is what's amazing about the Chiefs because they weren't surgical all year and all of a sudden they got to the playoffs and they're like, we're the most clean running, perfect offense you've ever seen. It just doesn't happen. It's amazing. The whole year was inconsistent as hell. They get to two playoff games and I go, it's the highest functioning offense in football all of a sudden. Like, what the hell has happened? And they will pick apart the zone is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So that's where I am really interested to see how both sides play it. Do the Ravens go, do the Chiefs go, no 13 this week, we're going to spread the field so you have to show yourself a little bit? Or are they going to go, wait, this is working for us and we still think we can run and do some things off of this and put you in a bind? I don't know, but that's something to watch for.
I mean, I love the nuance of that too, because we just talked about the Bills using the nickel defense. They used it 80% of the time this year. That was the fourth highest rate in the NFL.
Right.
But then you look at the Baltimore Ravens, yeah, and they're third in the NFL. They're 80% of the time, 80.4, and so they're third in the NFL. But you would say It's a different kind of nickel.
It definitely is. Different dudes here. You know, again, this is arguably the best linebacking duo in football. It's you know, dudes up front and Pierce and Matabuke, who were, you know, stout as hell in the middle of that defense. It's Jadeveon Clowney on the edge, who's like, will hold his ground against any tackle in football and then some. So, yes, that's where it's different, let alone they can play with their nickel personnel sets, like I told you, to where they can go, yeah, this is nickel, but this guy's like as good a tackler as most starting linebackers in football. We're not too worried about that. And that's what I would think you were going to see, is that they, you know, bring in a third safety and play that type of nickel. Because of what we said, they're going to go, wait, it's still Travis Kelce and Noah Gray. Those fuckers can run. I'm not going to let here and, like, have Malik Harrison guarding Noah Gray, who runs like 4-5 up the sideline. Right? So that's where I would expect we see something like that.
That was Inside the Numbers, powered by AWS. And before we move over to the other side of the ball, let's kind of take a closer look at the Ravens' defense. And for this, we're going inside the notebook. We're trying to decipher the penmanship of Chris Sims, and here it is. If you're playing at home, I'll give you a second. I don't want to give away the answer right away. It's sponsored by whoever can read this piece.
I had
here
a bad pen to start off my notes
I was
this week.
Did
say you notice
that
I changed?
It was light. And
yeah,
it was,
I made a change somewhere, I think, in the 49ers-Packers game. I was like, this is not getting it done.
That's good, though, that you can do that. You
self-scout
can see
thyself.
It's an audible,
you know,
midway
right?
through.
Yep. Blue, black pen.
A lot
blue,
of people try to power
pen
through with something that's not working. Change it up. So we go, Ravens physically great on defense.
Unlike the Browns, speaking of changing it up, they never did, right? But no, yes, there we
in
go.
In another class than the Texans,
right?
Unlike the Browns, yep, played D that were not going to let number 7 throw big plays down the field. Texans not
Surgical
enough
yet for this. Chiefs are. Right. All right. So let me read
that
again.
Was this the new pen? Was this the new pen?
No, it was not. But yes, I wrote, hey, Ravens played great on D. In another class in the Texans, unlike Browns, played Ds that were not going to let number seven, Stroud.
See what I mean?
Throw big plays down the field. Texans not surgical enough yet for this. Chiefs are. Ravens will have to be more aggressive versus the Chiefs, or 15 will pick them apart.
Hmm.
Right. Well, see, they played a team where they went, you know, a little bit, you know, some of the things we've already said or echoed here.
Yeah.
They played a team where, you know, they knew, like, wait, they're not a great run team. We're big up front. We're awesome at the run game. All right. We're going to trust that, and we're not going to go all in on what some of the Browns, you know, defensive calls were, where it's like, hey, we're going to get in Nico Collins' face, and we're not going to have anybody behind him. And if he gets off the line of scrimmage, you score a touchdown. But if he doesn't, then I don't know what happens. They were, like, not willing to take that gamble. So they went, nah, we'll play safer on that end. And you're kind of relying on the big play action passes, one-on-one throws like we talked about. Remember, we talked about one-on-one is usually good for the rookie quarterback. He doesn't have to read a whole lot. Ravens did the exact opposite. Mm. They were like, no, we're going to make you read stuff. You're not going to know what the hell you're looking at. And, you know, we're just going to kind of confuse you and make you guys execute and be surgical. And their offense isn't quite diverse yet, you know, to that capacity, nor it should be with a rookie quarterback.
So I'm curious what the other defensive coordinator is going to do. You're ready to flip the page?
Ready.
Go over to the Ravens on offense, Chiefs on defense here. Take a look at this. So Tomas Pena says, how can Spags potentially scheme to contain Lamar in the run game without giving up major holes in the passing game?
Yeah.
Do you foresee him being as aggressive as he was versus the Eagles in the last Super Bowl?
I don't know if it'll be that aggressive, right? You know, it's a great, great question right there.
Couldn't be that aggressive, right?
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, no, I think this offense is a better passing offense than the Eagles were, right? And I think Lamar Jackson's at a point of his career where you couldn't do that to him anymore to that capacity, right? Where he's going to, like we saw last week, you over blitz him, he's going to start to figure it out, they're going to figure it out, and he's going to start to tear you apart, right? So that's where it's different. But saying all that, they still got to be aggressive here. They got to find a way. There's no question about that. You know, one thing that's, like, apparent, you know, Lamar is so good at reading the field and making throws now that, like, hey, when the Texans had no choice but to blitz. Because when they played zone, first off, and just tried to rush their front four, he had all day. And then also, like, he can pick zones apart, right? Their offense is good enough. He's too good at throwing the ball and manipulating zone defenders that you can't stop it. So you got to be, you know, a next level a little bit in that department. And that's where the Texans finally just went, we're going to take the aggressive approach, because if we sit back, we're going to lose. He was running on you. He was scrambling on you. This defense is a whole different animal. Not only is it more talented, but, yeah, you've always heard me, like, Spags is game plan specific, right? The Texans, again, it's rooted in the 49ers, the Seattle scheme. It's a little bit like, hey, they play three defenses. Just which one are they going to break out against us, right? Mm-hmm. That's kind of what it is. And that's great when your team's good. But it's not always great in a game like this when it's like, oh, we're undermanned, and now I got to think of crazy stuff outside the box, right? Like Spags did in the Super Bowl last year against the Eagles. Spags will do that. Like, the Ravens are going to see some plays or some defenses and go, whoa, he didn't do that all year. What the hell was that, right? And I think he's going to have to do that. Here's the biggest reason. I mean, one, you got to vary your attack. If the Ravens start to get a feel for what you're in, they're going to start to tear you apart. So that's the most important thing. Two, you know, I still think blitz and some of the pressures, I still think it's fair to question how awesome the plan is from the Baltimore Ravens, right? You saw me in that. Like, their plan didn't blow me away when they started to figure it out. They kind of just went through, let's run, let's call some quarterback runs, and let's just call some quicker passes, right? That was kind of the plan. And I could see Spags finding some ways, as he always does, to maybe put them in some predicaments there as far as, like, how are you going to protect this? What are you going to do? Where's your hot route going to be? What's it going to be here? What's their plan? So that's something they're going to have to work on. But the other thing, too, you know, the Chiefs can play man-to-man, right? The Chiefs are a phenomenal man-to-man football team.
So that'll allow them to take some chances on some other things, too. Now, again, I don't think they should live in man-to-man because I think Zay Flowers and Bateman and OBJ is scary if you play them man-to-man too much, right? But they certainly, one every three plays or something like that, could break it out and be fine all game and survive with that group they got there. You know, so that's one thing. The other thing that I think the Chiefs have to worry about, and Pete, maybe you can look this up. You know, they're a little beat up in the interior part of their D-line. Naughty didn't play last week,
yep.
Right? I think you saw in my notes. To me, as I watched the game, I think they were very cognizant of if Chris Jones wasn't in there, we need to protect our defensive tackles and call some defenses that are a little bit run-stopping, run blitzes, whatever. And that does worry me because when Chris Jones comes out of the game, that interior part, those D-tackles – It's not the most, you know, incredible group you've ever seen. And I think they could have some issues with those big boys from Baltimore up front.
While no one knows what tomorrow may bring, Bridgestone is working toward a more positive outlook. With innovations like developing a tire using 75% recycled and renewable materials. It's just one of the many ways Bridgestone is making a difference today for generations to come. Because that's what really matters. Bridgestone, solutions for your journey. Visit whatreallymatters.com to learn more.
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat. Protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
So let's hammer home on this point because you touched on it a little bit. Swish B says, how do you think Todd Monken is going to attack those all-out pressure looks that Spags is known for? Personally, I could see the RPO attack being successful for the Ravens, but would like to hear your thoughts. So if you were Todd Monken, If you were him, and you say you didn't necessarily love all the stuff that he did or has done, how would you handle it if Spags brings that pressure?
I think he can put this D more in a bind than Buffalo did, right? There's more to defend with the Ravens offense than there is the Buffalo offense. It's not even close, right? So, it's kind of unique because I think it's kind of good. It was good practice for the Chiefs last week, but I don't think they can play it the same way. But I really look at it and go, I think the Lamar Jackson run game poses real issues for the Chiefs in this one. I do. One, you know, hey, years past, I think they were like, hey, we can cheat on these receivers aren't that good. We don't have to worry about it, blah, blah, blah. They can't do that anymore. And they can't also go, oh, we kind of know this pass offense is kind of simple, right? This one, they got answers. There's creativity, right? So where I think they had that luxury in years past. You know, this, I don't think they have that luxury against this group, let alone, like you just heard me say, I think they got to worry about their D-line a little bit in the run game department. And that's where I think, yes, and again, to me, where the game changes when your playoff football teams are good, coaches are really good, what's the only advantage you can have? Lamar Jackson run game is something that I would certainly look at to break out that is going to scare the shit out of Spags when he sees it a few times and go, oh, no, if I call this blitz and they call that quarterback design run play, we're not going to have enough people over in this area and I'm in trouble, right? And that'll make them back off a little just in itself, right? So he's going to have to be creative to find ways and play that game. But – you know, that's where this game is awesome. There's a little bit of kryptonite for each team on both sides of the ball where you go, oh, this is a little issue for them. Oh, but they got a little issue too. Oh, this is an issue for them. Oh, but they got a little issue too. And that's why I think it's going to be a clash of the Titans on Sunday.
You have two elite defensive coordinators in this game, too. You have Spags, who's been there forever and has been considered a great defensive coordinator for a long time now.
Right.
And now you got Mike McDonald, who might be a head coach here very soon. Whose style, from what you've seen, do you like more?
Man, I think they're my two favorites.
Like,
right?
One and two, or think, two and one?
I think it's... man. I don't know. I guess I would say McDonald, but it's close, right? I've kind of said all year they're my favorite defense to watch and some of the stuff they do. But it's rooted a lot in the same principles. Never letting the quarterback feel comfortable mentally, physically, right? Play with the physical recklessness that is second to none. And then with all that creativity, are just pretty sound across the board, right? Usually, like, you know, defenses that do that much, you just go, well, they're going to fuck a few things up every now and then. These guys are both, like, on their P's and Q's, the defensive football players.
Well,
and
coached.
Don't mess up.
Really, know their assignments.
Really, really well coached.
Okay.
I just want to make sure I didn't miss
anything.
Is there
anything else in the notebook about here? Anything with the Ravens offense? I mean, we talked about how they made the adjustment at halftime and really figured out a blitz plan there.
Yes, they did. Yep.
That showed itself.
Yep, exactly right. I mean, they whooped the crap out of the Texans like we kind of said on Monday.
Yep.
It was just a few C.J. Stroud plays, and that was it. I would go back to what I said. If I'm the Chiefs, I am opting to spread them out a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean you can't keep your two and three tight end sets on the field a little bit, but I think that's going to be something to watch. Where the Chiefs, too, I think are good for the Ravens, or have a good match, too, is the Chiefs are not like a – you've heard me say this before. Hey, if it's too deep, play the left side of the field. If it's one deep, play the right side of the field, right? We have a two deep concept on the left. We got a one deep concept on the right. It's too hard to figure that shit out with the Ravens. And you need all across the board type of reads. The Chiefs are that type of football team, right? And the Chiefs, they run the ball a little bit. Hey, like I said, the Ravens are not the greatest man-to-man football team. And that could be something to watch out for, too. Other thing I'll say, too, here, just why I'm just rattling a few things off.
Yeah.
The Ravens, like, I think this is a game. Chiefs, don't be afraid to play a little one-on-one ball. The Chiefs will go, or the Ravens will go man-to-man on the receiver to the left. And if you have three receivers to the right, they'll go, hey, guy on the left, you play man-to-man, and then we're going to play zone with the other six defenders over here, right? So there's times where you can just go, hey, Rashee Rice, run a comeback, run an out route. And you can just go, let's just throw it there, not deal with all that disguising and all the craziness they have out there. So I think those are things to watch, and I think I kind of hit it all.
You're making your pick tomorrow. I feel like...
Yeah, what do you feel?
When hearing you talk about it, I feel like you're trending towards Chiefs a little bit and the Mahomes magic, and they've got some answers here. But I think I would say Ravens. And the thing, the tiebreaker for me is like the injuries. And Pete puts him here at the end here. Derek Nnadi on the defensive side for the Chiefs, their defensive tackle, hurt his tricep in the wild card, did not practice all last week.
Right.
Willie Gay tweaked his neck per Andy Reid, and Mike Edwards had a concussion in the game. So their free safety, questionable.
I just want to make sure, I didn't miss anything Chiefs related a little bit. Mahomes is on fire in that game. The mechanics were amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I totally heard everything you said there. I didn't mean to disregard it. I'm going through my one more thing, Colin, because it was hard. I didn't know how we were going to break this down, and I have it broken down into the order of the games in which they were played last weekend.
Yeah. You're backward looking. We're forward looking.
I know.
We're
so I'm trying to piece together my Ravens notes, and then my Chiefs notes are like 10 pages in the other direction. So I'm trying to make sure I got it all here the right way. But I think
anything else from your Chiefs O notes?
Yes.
That could be beneficial. That you have not already mentioned against the Ravens.
I don't think so. I think the Chiefs O stuff, I'm pretty good.
Okay.
Like I said, though, I do think it's the spread out thing because they can protect. And if they play zone, I think they can pick it apart. I think that's pretty good on the Chiefs O side. The Chiefs defense, right? I think we rattled off a few of these things as well. And one of the things I thought the Bills maybe dropped the ball on just a little bit is they should have attacked down the field a little bit more, right? They were compromised. They were. But I think there was a few times where I would have gone, you need to back them off at one point here, right? We saw the Stephon Diggs. He got by. It was him and Justin Reed 60 yards down the field. Remember Khalil Shakir? He dropped a go route down the left sideline earlier in the fourth quarter. Remember that? He kind of had a fall to the ground. It would have been a good catch. Mm. He had his hands underneath it, right? But that would be something I like. I don't think the Ravens will be afraid to attack the Chiefs' aggressiveness, right? If they're going to be like, oh, you want to play man-to-man? You want to play bump-to-bump on Zay Flowers? Okay, I'm Lamar fucking Jackson. I'm going to throw the go route. I will throw the go route. Like, you're crazy, right? So that's something to watch for. I talked about the Ravens' O-line with the D-tackles thing. And, you know, I think after I look at it all, I think we're pretty good. Okay. I think we brought up all the points.
I'll give you the right to bring up a point if you remember it at some point in our next game.
Thank you.
I will go back. We'll pause and we'll go back. And we can handle that. The game. The 3 seed in the NFC, the Detroit Lions in the NFC Championship for the first time since 1991. I was watching that game. I mentioned it as a young little man. Watched them get destroyed. But I was like, they'll be back here soon. I mean, what am I going to be? You know, maybe 15, 16, 20 at most. 44, with hair on my chest now and gray everywhere.
All grown
they're finally
up.
Back. 49ers seems like they're here every year. They're the 1 seed. They're favored by 7, favored by a touchdown in this one.
The 49ers are favored by 7?
Favored by 7.
Are you kidding me?
It's too much, you think.
It opened at 7?
6.5, and it's now up to 7.
Wow. Damn, I did not know that. I'm a little surprised with that number. That's a little high for me.
Sounds like someone will be picking some away team to cover potentially this game.
I'm surprised to hear it that it's that high.
Why?
Well, you've heard my thoughts on that. I think you guys match up with them in some ways, right? To just say 7 points, that's a lot to me. I mean, your O-line is really good. Their front four is going to be – they're going to have issues. You guys protect great. They're not killing it in the pass rush department right now, right? I mean, we talk about I know I've said it a million times, but, the ability to throw the ball aggressively down the field outside the numbers, the 49ers will give it to you. They actually dare you to do it. You guys can do that. You guys can stop the run, right? They're not a big drop back pass. We're going to pick you apart and get in the shotgun. They want to do it more through play action and bootlegs. Okay, here's a drop back pass, but here's a run. Here's a play action. Here's another play action. Here's a screen to the receiver. Here's a run. Okay, we're in shotgun. We throw it, drop back, back to the run, back to the right. That's how they want to play.
Yeah.
The reason I was scared for you guys last week is that I was going, this fucking Bucs team could get in the shotgun and drop back and pass and tear your secondary apart a little bit. You know, they can tear you apart, but it's a different way. And I think the way they do it fits to how you guys play a little bit more. That's why I guess I'm surprised to hear 7 points.
All right, we'll get into all this by way of some of these homey questions. But what I will say is that Detroit Lions offensive line, in the conversation, for the best in all of football.
100%.
They've played like that through the run game, through the pass game.
Penei Sewell and Ragnow were on my first team All-Pro.
But that would be the problem. We saw Frank Ragnow a little dinged up.
Yeah.
He gutted through it.
Right.
And we don't know what's going on. Doesn't sound good for their left guard and Jonah Jackson. Per Next Gen Stats, the backup when he came in, Coyote Iwosika, had a team-high 7 pressures allowed on 25 snaps. That's 28 snaps. That's 25% of the time. Jonah Jackson, he left in the second quarter. It was Vita Vea that was able to get those pressures, a lot of those against Iwosika.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that would be the concern, is
100%.
That they're not 100%.
100%. That's right. Now, hey, even if Iwosika has to play, right? He gets a week of practice. He gets ready. He'll be a different guy than he was getting thrown into that situation. That's not always easy, right? It's not. Like, oh, shit, I haven't done shit all week. I did some fake, scout team reps. Oh, no, now I'm man up on Vita Vea? Like, have fun. Or Kalijah Kansi or Logan Hall. I mean, they got studs there. So we'll see with the Jonah Jackson thing. The Frank Ragnow thing, if you made me bet, I bet you he plays. By just the way the injury looked, the way he looked the rest of the football game, I know it wasn't great. I'm sure he woke up sore as hell and everything like that. But it feels like one of those where, he probably won't be 100%, but I don't think he'll be worse than 90%, if that makes sense. We'll see where it goes there. But, yes,
He played every snap, Ragnow.
He did. He played, right? He never missed a snap. He limped off the field after, you know, the touchdown one time and all of that. But he was out there. And I do think that's, you know, again, going to be something that you guys can lean on in this football game. Okay. A team that doesn't love the blitz, they want to rush their front four. You guys can protect. You're going to be able to let people develop downfield and get some stuff like that. Let alone, you know, I don't think the 49ers defense is as good as in years past, and even their run defense. And that would be one thing, again, I will continue to yell at your offense for. Run the fucking ball. I don't really get it. I don't. Even in that game the other day, watching that back, you know me. I'm not, like, sitting here just to say run the ball because I was born in 1963 and I just think you should run the ball because somebody told me that in 1967, right? I don't care about that. It's about doing what the defense, what they're telling you to do, yeah, and taking advantage of your strengths. And in that football game, you guys started to dominate on the drive. You ran the ball, period, right? First off, you guys are so good up front that you should never be too scared away from the run, no matter what the numbers of the scheme are. You're so good, and then you're versatile in your scheme.
I think the two times they played the Bucs this year, they were more pass heavy than they were in most other games.
Way too much. I think they gave.
But they were just scared that they couldn't do it as effectively.
I get it, and you know, they got scared, a little too scared, especially in this game where we talked about the Bucs played a lot of we're going to play coverage, we're not going to blitz as much, we're going to throw the okie doke at you. That they were playing for the pass, right? That's where I didn't get it. Game got tight at 17-17, right? And they basically went, fuck you, here comes Jahmyr Gibbs. And you guys went right down the field and scored a touchdown. And then you know what happened the next series? The Bucks were like, we couldn't stop the run the last drive. We have to put a ton of people at the line of scrimmage. We got to stop doing it. And guess what they did? They played man-to-man, and you guys hit two or three big pass plays, and you went and scored, and it was 31-17. Just like that. So that's where I say it, you know, let alone lean on it, because Jahmyr Gibbs is your best offensive football player or most explosive.
Yeah.
You're good at running the football, and it's something that can really put the 49ers in a bind here. It really can. And that's what the Packers did a little bit too. And you guys are very good at marrying your run game with your pass game to where the 49ers are such a fast flow, right? You know, Dre Greenlaw and Fred Warner, they see the backside guard pull. Well, fuck, they're at the hole sometimes before the running back gets there. They're so good at reading that stuff. But you guys do those same type of things and then go, whoop, we're not giving it to them. We pulled the guard. We're actually still throwing the football. And that is going to give the 49ers problems.
Edward Rowland says, damn okay, Jahmyr Gibbs. He likes him as much as you do, Chris. Big plays running and receiving. How should Goff in Detroit utilize Gibbs alongside St. Brown and Laporta to be competitive against the Niners? You just think more.
Yeah.
More Jahmyr Gibbs.
More Jahmyr Gibbs. Just get the ball in his hands a little bit. I like Montgomery, but I would only really bring in Montgomery down near the goal line or in short yardage situations. It's go time, Detroit. You give your best players, you ride them. Shanahan's not going to bring in McCaffrey's backup when they're on the 50-yard line. I can tell you that. He's going to go, wait, I'm paying this guy. He's the fucking man. We're going to give him the fucking ball, and we're going to ride him to the Super Bowl, right? You guys, for some reason, want to be like, oh, well, Montgomery's a good pro. He's been good to us. He does a lot of good things. I know. He is, definitely. But the other guy's better. Play Gibbs. Play him more. Lean on him, right? And if I'm the 49ers, yeah, I think you guys could put them in a bind that way. You know, I know this game, like, there was a part where you go, wait, the Bucs are playing this way. It's a little conservative. Okay, but the game's 10-10 at halftime. And, like, you know, but at the same time, as I was sitting there and, like, kind of writing the notes of, like, man, it's just a little too conservative and all that, you know, I'm going, okay, it's 10-10. But then I start to think about it. Like, in the third quarter, I'm starting to think about, like, yeah, okay, it's 17 all, but, like, it's had the feel of the Bucs barely hanging on defense, like, the whole game. Right? It's like, here's a receiver. He's wide open on third down. Oh, their D-line batted it down. Okay, good play. Great job. Oh, you know, here's a guy. It's one-on-one. And, oh, the DB made a great play and just knocked it out. Or Amon-Ra dropped the ball over the middle wide open on a third down. Right? There was just some of that where I was like, I don't know if they're, you know, they're just catching some breaks. It didn't feel like they were, like, physically dominating or hanging in there. It felt like they were just hanging on to keep that Lions offense under control. And I don't think the 49ers can do that again, or the Lions will take advantage of it.
Well, what the Lions showed last game is that they did, yeah, throw the ball 43 times. They had a lot of confidence in Jared Goff making the right play, especially late in the game. S. Hesketh, 83, says, how have Dan Campbell and Ben Johnson been able to do what Sean McVay couldn't? Extract the maximum from Jared Goff. Is it a game plan and play calling thing, or a mental, psychological thing, or psychosis, as Chris would say? Keep up the great work. Go, Ahmed. Go, Lions. Clap it up.
Yeah, clap it up. There's a lot there, mentally and physically. Definitely, like, rebuilt Jared Goff, right? You've heard me say all this stuff a little bit, but we got to answer our guy here. Mm-hmm. I mean, Goff won. When you're the number one pick, you're just, it's rose petals at your feet all the time. Even when you're missing wide open people, they're like, oh, you're still so great. Oh, we'll give you $40 million, even though you missed the last five throws. Okay. You lost the Super Bowl. Here's $35 million, right? Because it's all like, oh, he was the number one pick, and we got to make it look like we make it work. And everybody thought he was the number one. So there's like a little of that, like a babying factor, mm-hmm. right? All right. Also, like, their O-line wasn't great in those years, where when they played good teams, right? This is the weird thing about Jared Goff. He's great against the blitz. He's horrible versus pressure. Does that make sense to everybody up there? He's great at the blitz right now with the Lions because you guys are very good at picking it up. He knows where it's coming from. He gets it orchestrated, right? But we know if that blitz starts to get close or the front four gets close and the pocket starts to close in, he's not that great. Well, he definitely had a lot more of that with the Rams. They weren't quite good up front. They were kind of doing it with tricks and McVay covering holes a little bit with how he called plays, right? Let alone, you know, if you really go back, and you know I used to make fun of Jared Goff in a little bit because, like, if it wasn't served up on a silver platter for him, he couldn't make it happen. And I think a little bit goes into everything that I just kind of talked about was the problem. He was a little bit like, if he's not wide open, I'm not throwing the ball. If I don't see anybody in the screen, I don't throw it. Dan Campbell and Mark Brunell and Ben Johnson were like, hey, fucker. He's open. I know it's only by 5 inches, but this is the NFL. You got to throw this the fuck in there, right? Let alone they had an O-line to protect him. They taught him how to pick up blitzes. Their offensive line's very well schooled in that department. They play play-action football, and they've played to his strengths that way and have more people around him in the strengths. Let alone his ass was, you know, backed against into the corner. Like, oh, shit, I better start playing better and doing some of these better things, or this team's going to trade me away, and I won't be a starter. So I think all these things happen for a good reason in Jared Goff's life, and great job by the coaching staff bringing him along, and a great job by him continuing to fight and get better.
It's all connected.
Yeah.
And you do a good job of illustrating that. It's like Jared Goff is not this way without that offensive line and without the running game and without maybe some of the new innovations from Ben Johnson there. And I think this is a good time to – we can flip back to this side of the ball, but let's talk about the other quarterback.
Yeah, okay.
Because I think there's a similar conversation about him. How much is him? How much is Shanahan?
Sure.
It doesn't matter.
Right.
It's a team sport.
Right.
They're playing well in the offenses, the situations they have, which is exactly what they need to do. Burn Unit wants to know, do you expect Brock Purdy to torch the Lions defense this week with no rain or rust to affect him?
I expect a bounce back game. I do. Right? You know, where I do think he could torch them is, and I think I wrote it, you know, a lot in my notes once again. I think you saw it. Like, first off, he played like shit last week. Let's start there. It was horrible. Like, I'm not overstating it. He played horrible last week.
Could he just not throw it?
Because he couldn't throw it, it started to affect his decisions, right? There was a number of plays where I'm like, throw it. And he didn't want to because he was like, I lost control of the last three, so I'm going to check it down here, right? If he hits a few of the throws last week, he's going to break the Packers out of their defensive game plan, and they're going to break the game wide open, right? But because he kept missing throws, they kept going, we'll just play this conservative coverage and play off and let you have these throws because you're not really making us pay, right? So they can continue to kind of do that throughout. I definitely expect a bounce back game. I do. I also, you know, you guys, and you've heard me say this a lot throughout the year, you guys overplay situation and personnel sets, which I like. That's who you are. You're aggressive. You guys' defense is not perfect. But as we've talked about a million times, if it's third and one, you guys fucking go to, we're not going to let you get the 1 yard. You know, in fact, we're not even going to have a safety deep. If you throw it deep, you might score a touchdown.
You can have 65.
Right.
You're not getting the one.
Exactly right. You overplay personnel sets and formations and the down and distance. And that's like we talked about earlier in the year. If it's third and six, you guys play for the 7 yard pass. And you go, you're not getting seven. do you have the guts to throw a 20? Because we'll give you that on 3rd and 6. And that's where you guys are really cool, right? I expect you guys to go all in to stop the run. It's scary against this group. It is. And then with your secondary, you know, the one of the reasons I know I've said, like, the 49ers defense is not as good as years past, and maybe their run O-line is not as physically dominant as years past, but their offensive passing game, minus last week, is the best it's been in the Shanahan era, to where, you know, you can't just go, oh, it's Jimmy Garoppolo, he'll screw it up, he won't read the play, whatever, and we're just going to play run defense, and he really won't take advantage of all that's there to be had. Like, Brock Purdy, for the most part of the year, has tore you up when you overplay some of those things, right? And that's where it will be interesting as far as how you guys go about that and how you want to play them. Their 21 personnel, especially if Deebo Samuel is healthy, is going to give you guys problems. When teams go 21 personnel, you guys who are big on defense already go, let's fucking get bigger, right? And you put in 3 linebackers, and you'll have 4 big D linemen in there, maybe even 5, and go, you're not running the ball. But the 49ers are phenomenal at passing the ball out of those sets too. And that's where I think it's going to be interesting too. As much as you guys want to go all in and go, no, you know, we're going to make sure we take one thing away and stop the run, that could be dangerous against this group. We know. Because then, okay, they run it a little bit success, and now you guys are like, we got to stop the run. And then, oh, no, now it's the play action. Now it's the boots. Now it's the fake run and the screen outside the Deebo. And all of a sudden you're like, damn, we got Jack Campbell and all these and Derek Barnes and Anzalone in and 5 big D linemen, and now we can't pursue, you know, when they run the play action or the screen or the toss sweep or whatever. And I think that's one fascinating angle to me.
Yeah, Deebo could be a huge problem if he plays. So his shoulder is not broken. He had a hairline fracture in week 6. It's not the situation right now, but his status for Sunday is still up in the air. And so Panikar 37 wants to know, why does the 49ers offense seem to change so much when removing Deebo Samuel? They won last week, but the offense looked very different without him.
Yeah, well, he's just the jack of all trades. He's the ultimate weapon, right? That's the big thing. And part of that personnel set we talk about is such a big thing too, right? I mean, one, it's oh, wait, we want to worry about the run game and Kittle and the play action and all that. You overplay that. That's where Deebo comes into, a slant off the backside. Oh, a wide receiver screen. Now he's running up 50 yards up the middle like the Eagles game for a touchdown, right? So he's a big part of their checks and balances, as you hear me say, right? What do they always do when you start to overplay the McCaffrey run game? What do they always do? They fake it and reverse it to Deebo, right? They go, you're overplaying this. Then Deebo goes out the back door, and we go, holy shit, look at this guy. He's got 3 rockets up his ass. He's angry as hell. He's running like a running back, and now he's doing that. So that's where – and I think he has an attitude and a personality that team feeds off of. He's the leader in that department.
Is he more important to the offense than McCaffrey?
I feel like sometimes to the attitude of the offense he is a little bit, and – you know, I don't want to say he's more important. I don't think that. But I think he's the ultimate gadget, big play, jack of all trades type of player. Like, I think that's where
he can get
a
defense off of what they want to do.
He definitely can. Or if a defense goes all in on something else, you go, oh, we're going to leave Deebo there in that matchup? Oh, no, right? And I think that's where he's really great. And back to the 21 thing, too. You know, like, again, like, if I'm the 49ers, I'm not sure if I want to play phone booth football against you guys. You guys like that, right? But at the same time, I want to think I want to get in 21 personnel. And let me test the waters. Let me see if we can run the ball against them. But let me get in 21 personnel, and now we get into, oh, it's empty, right? You know, we've seen them do that. Like, there's 2 backs and, you know, 1 tight end. And, wait, they're in the shotgun with nobody in the backfield now, right? And then they pose problems for you. And then it's all of a sudden, it's like, oh, shit. Derek Barnes is covering Christian McCaffrey one-on-one in the slot. Oh, no, that's not good for us, Detroit, right? So that's the aspect I'm interested in seeing, too. But, you know, that's where, again, that'll take your guys' ability to go all in. Like, I think you heard me say, like, the Bucs go empty. What do the Lions do? And the all-in category, what does that do for them? That they rush 3 and drop 8. Because, oh, they're empty. They go all in on, let's stop empty. Oh, they're going to run the ball in a power set. We're going to go all in on that. That's what they do. And they got to be careful with doing that. with Shanahan. You know me. When you've heard me say it for 4 years now. Yeah. When you start to become predictable a little bit with what you do, that's where he can get you. And they got to be careful that they, they got to throw a few curveballs in there every now and then.
Yeah, so Nigel Bryant thinks maybe the Lions can learn from what the Green Bay Packers did. What takeaways from the Green Bay San Francisco game can Aaron Glenn use this week to best prepare his defense for the daunting task of stopping that offense?
I think, a little bit is I hear you. Like the Packers played 5 and 6 man fronts and then just played the safeties and secondary off and basically went, we're going to stop the run. And we're not going to let you do some play-action pass. And like we said, Kittle or Ayuk are now screaming down the middle, and our safeties came up to stop the run, or we're so into the run game that now you're wide open with some of these play-action passes down the field. They kind of played that way. And they were like, okay, we're going to do that. We'll see if you guys can execute and do all that. Now, I expect Brock Purdy to play better, right? I expect the ball to be dry, certainly. But I think along those same lines, I would test the waters just like that. If I'm the Lions, but you guys do this already, play a lot of five-man fronts, play off, and let's see if Brock Purdy and their offense is on their surgicality game and can they go there. And then you readjust. But I think that's what you learned from that game last week. Definitely. And listen, five-man fronts are – you got to be always thinking about that when you play the 49ers. That McCaffrey run, the McCaffrey almost all successful runs, when the Packers decide to go, let's go a four-man front here, they might go play action pass, they might do something. They ran the ball. The big touchdown run was against that four-man front. So, that's another – it's another great game. I think the most fascinating thing about both of these games is how much I think of both coachings, all four coaching staffs. And that's where I go, wait, these guys are all pretty creative on both sides of the ball. They can all think outside the box. They're all going to evaluate themselves and the other team the right way. Now, there's a fork in the road here. And which way are they going to go? And I can kind of see like a fork in the road for all like eight coordinators.
Yeah.
To where I go, oh, they could play it. Do the 49ers want to spread it out and go, hey, they're not good in the secondary and we're going to make them play that game? Or are they going to go, wait, we're really good at 21 and running the ball and playing off that and then spreading it out every now and then? I just, there's a lot of different ways I could see this going.
So out of the four coordinators in the game, Aaron Glenn's been under fire because that defense hasn't been great, but they realize that
he's covering holes.
There's some holes in
there.
Steve Wilks has also been under fire for the 49ers.
Yeah.
Do you feel like as the year has gone on, he's become more comfortable with the system, or is he still there's still growing pains with Wilks?
I still think there's some growing pains.
Yeah.
I do. I think you saw in my notes that one of the things with them right now, I think they need to play a little more, man. I do. I would dabble in it a little more, especially against your group, as you heard me say. Like it's not always the scariest, right? It's awesome. Don't get me wrong. Don't get all over me, Detroit fans. I know. Yeah. You're still really good there, right? But I look at that. Where I didn't like the 49ers and even some of the things I saw last week, and it would scare me against a guy like Ben Johnson, is, LaFleur and company. And this has been like they found ways to clear out those zones and then have somebody running through in a big window or hole, right? Like, hey, we'll use these two or three of your guys. You kind of read them, but we're really using them just to get the 49ers and their match zone coverage out of the way. And then we're going to bring somebody else in. The play's really for that guy. Still read it out because they might fall down or whatever. But in the back of your mind, I'm really calling the play for this guy. I'm clearing it all out for this guy. And that scares me for the 49ers a little bit. And that's where I think they'll have to bend a little bit. And like I said, their D is not played as great up front to where – they might have to do it when they start to go, ooh, I don't know. They might be able to run the ball on us. We might have to, play a little bit more man and gamble that way.
You know who has played well on defense this year and in the playoffs? My guy, Aiden Hutchinson. We're going back inside the numbers powered by AWS. They had a little graphic they made. Not a little graphic. It was a sizable graphic on the pressures of five or more in a game this season. So if you had five pressures or more in a game, how many times you do it? Aiden Hutchinson has done it, including the playoffs, 16 times. Chris, look at the wonder of this graphic.
That's
16 games where he has had five or more pressures. That is clearly the number one in the NFL. Number two is Nick Bosa with 12 such games.
Yeah, that's incredible. It really is. Hey, he's a force. He's one of the best defensive players in football. And it goes above and beyond his pass rushing, as we've talked about a lot. I mean, he's a disruptor. He's awesome in the run game. And he's your you're one blue chip pass rusher, and you guys, because of Aaron Glenn and covering holes and the tactical, we'll send a crazy blitz every now and then, you do a good job of like not letting teams double them or do anything that way either. And that's really what's good. But damn, you guys, the greatest thing that happened to Detroit in the last 5 years is Jacksonville decided to draft Trayvon Walker.
So he, of those six pressures this past week, four of them were under 2.5 seconds. So he was getting there quickly. A couple were unblocked, or at least one was unblocked.
But
right
it goes
now.
Into that. Yeah, it goes again. See, that's what they do too, right? And that's where those stats can be misleading at times, right? Is just because it's like, oh, okay, well, wait. They send a blitz where he didn't get blocked, right? But either way, it's twofold there. Aaron Glenn does a good job of making sure he gets some advantages every now and then. And then, of course, he's awesome when he does get those advantages.
I sent that tweet to you and Pete and Matt the other day on Cam Sutton. Because, you know, we've talked about it. You know, what's the weakness of the Lions defense? They got some holes. The outside corners are not great. They do give up some passing yards there. They've been going against some great wide receivers, Cam Sutton specifically. And he is on an island.
Yes.
And he's probably not suited to be on an island. But for the Lions, they want to send Branch. They want to send Melifonwu. They want to create some of those creative pressures.
Yeah.
And that does put Cam Sutton in a tough spot.
Definitely.
All credit to him. He's been put on an island.
He has. He's a, you know, I think you and I were texting last night. I mean, he's had a murderer's row as far as big time receivers he's had to play against. And they put pressure on him, you know, and he handles it as best as he can. He's not that. He's a career nickel player who now has been put outside and probably not playing in the position that best suits him. But to get their best 11 on the field, Branch is a better nickel player, right? Let's put him there. Cam Sutton, maybe not an A-plus outside corner, but still damn good enough and can play there to where we're the best that way. The 49ers, where they're a little different in years past too, is that, you know, they throw the ball outside the numbers a little bit more with Brock Purdy as compared to what they used to do with Garoppolo, right? I mean, we've had some games where we've come in here Monday and I go, man, this throw by Brock Purdy out here was big time and, you know, got them off the hook in the Eagles game. And he certainly hasn't been afraid to throw the 15-yard out, the 10-yard out of his out. That is what's different about them a little bit. They will play a little one-on-one ball as compared to years past. So, you know, some fascinating things here. And, I think the 49ers D, though, has to be a splash more aggressive in this game than they would normally be. I don't think their four-man rush is going to be able to get there consistently. I think they got to blitz a little bit. I think it also, too, you know, their secondary is good enough. It's better in years past than playing man than it usually is, to where I think they could dabble in that a little bit more.
Yeah, to hammer home the point on Cam Sutton and what he's had to go through, week 16, Justin Jefferson caught a touchdown, 83 yards against him. CeeDee Lamb, 7 catches against him for 96 yards. Justin Jefferson, 5 catches for 70. He wasn't really guarding Puka Nacua much in that game, so gave up just one catch there, it looks like. But Mike Evans, 9 catches for 124 yards and a touchdown. It's been tough for Cam Sutton there.
Yeah.
That was Inside the Numbers, powered by AWS.
Did you know Bridgestone developed a tire using 75% recycled and renewable materials? Making a difference today for future generations. That's what really matters. Bridgestone, solutions for your journey. Visit whatreallymatters.com to learn more.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We're looking over the notes. We're making sure we haven't left anything out.
I think, you know.
You were surprised it was a 7-point spread. And I think, you know, if Debo doesn't play, Pete notes here in a rundown that there was a 3-game losing streak. Vikings, Bengals, Browns. Debo didn't play in any of those games, but Trent Williams also
missed those
was injured
games
at that time. We have a question here from Fly Foggy. This is the atmosphere inside the 49ers and Lions locker room after the game, and their respective coach speech was on completely different levels.
Yes, it was.
So it was Kyle just subdued. I didn't
Kyle
really see
Kyle was just
his.
Like, hey, you won, way to persevere. But it was a little bit like, hey, we thought we were going to fucking win, and we expected to be where we are next week and all that. Dan Campbell's was a little bit more of like, you know, this is awesome. We're still playing. You know how hard it is to do what we're doing and all that. It was a little more that way.
He goes, knowing that, do you think that will affect the energy both teams bring to the field for the conference championship game?
Well, I would hope the 49ers' energy is different, right? It needs to be a little bit. The 49ers, it was there to be had. They were outplayed in that game.
Yeah.
You know, the way Purdy played, some of the plays LaFleur and the special teams made, the offense made, and then, you know, the special teams was damn good. I mean, hey, listen, again, I mean, what is it? Three out of the last four drives, there's two interceptions, a missed field goal. Let's not forget, in the first half, they were inside the 10 and went for a tush push on 4th-and-1 and didn't even get it, right? I mean, there's things there to be concerned about. As I said, you know, I think on Monday to you, it's the perfect win for a coach like Shanahan to be pissed off at his football team. We played like shit. We didn't play good enough. It's the NFC Championship game. We play like that. Again, we're going home. The team knows that. They're going to be scared. They're going to be on edge. I'd be shocked if they don't come out with a little bit of a different energy and play a different style of football. I don't doubt what the Lions are going to come out like. Mm. That's not even a question. It's going to be psycho, positivity, awesome, Dan Campbell energy, all of that. And, you know, I think they're pretty consistent that way. 49ers have definitely been a little all over the place, a little, as far as that's concerned. You know, you heard me say, the Ravens game, I never saw them with less of an edge in that Ravens game. That's the only game I can ever remember the 49ers dapping guys up, smiling, talking between plays, doing that kind of crap. That was odd to see. And, of course, the performance this last weekend was pretty odd as well.
All right. Have we hit all the notes?
The last thing I have to say.
One more thing.
Is, like, my last note on the Packers offense versus the 49ers D. There
thanks,
he is.
Thanks,
what
Columbo.
Up, Columbo? What a great head of hair that guy had.
Streaming on Peacock. If you still have it in the service, we appreciate that.
The interception on the last play of the game by Jordan Love is quite possibly the dumbest throw in the history of playoff football. You know I've been positive with Jordan Love. I love the future. I love all of it. The first interception was bad throw, whatever. The second one, like, watching it on film made it worse. It already was like, what the hell on TV? On film, it's insane. If he makes the completion, I'm not joking you, it's the greatest throw in the history of football that I've never seen anybody make. Never. Brett Favre, Elway, Josh Allen, Mahomes, nobody. He was on a almost dead sprint run on the numbers on the right, and he was throwing an in-cut to Christian Watson, who was on the right running full speed to the left, who was going to be on the other numbers on the left side of the field, let alone it was 35 yards downfield, add another 10 because it's across the field too now, like, insanity. I cannot believe he did that. After the year he had of taking care of the football and being smart, to try that play, right? I know people online were like, it's like Brett Favre and the Viking Saints. Yeah. Like, this is way worse. Brett Favre at least had pulled those off 150 times in his career, and that was only like 12 yards down the field. This was, I don't even know. It was full Tropic Thunder on that moment, and it stinks that the year ended that way for him.
What do you think for him? You know, because it was such a great year, such a positive
year.
But it's like the fact that that was your last play.
It stinks, and it's going to hurt them all offseason.
Yeah.
But either way, the future's bright. Green Bay's got something, and, you know, like we've talked about, they got a lot of young talent. They're going to be a pain in the ass for your Lions here the next few years.
Young talent, you always want that. You always want big butt talent, too.
You've got to have it.
For the divisional round, big butt awards. Woo!
It is
we
that
like
time.
Big butts and we cannot lie.
The big butt of the week.
Oh.
Time to give some love to these big guys.
Some touches.
There's a couple sacks, forced fumble. He's a butting superstar.
Thanks. Give it to him, Ahmed.
One butt cheek.
And this is why you're the big butt expert of the world right now.
Our first big butt award winner is not a butting superstar. He's a butted superstar. He's been
he's already
a
butted
superstar.
Out.
He's butted out.
He's been busting through his pants.
Chris Jones. His first big butt of the year. He had five last year. An NFL high five
how
last year.
How disrespectful are you?
I don't know how that happened. Well, he wasn't here. Well, how many games did he miss in the beginning of the year?
A few.
So there you
two?
Go.
Two? Or was it,
was
yeah,
it just,
was it
two? Was it just
two?
One?
I can't remember.
I thought it was more than that. Maybe
yeah,
two.
Been, he right. might have been back in for the two, but he didn't play because okay. he wasn't in shape yet or ready to go.
Whatever it was, he was great in this one. A tipped pass at a crucial time and then impacted that throw to Shakir on the last drive. And Chris Jones was asked about that by Albert Breer, said, "The whole game, I was on the inside. My coaches had been telling me to go outside, contain the outside. The whole game, I was like, we're not ready yet. It needed to be a critical situation because if I showed it too early in the game, they were going to be able to adjust to it. Later on in the game, I took that opportunity." How about that? How about that?
It is really cool. It shows you that on third downs and stuff, they have the flexibility to line up where they want to line up.
I was going to say, so it's all up to Chris Jones. Coach is like, go over here. He's like, I'm not ready.
Well, they've told him he can. Yeah, I know. Yes, you know. But we've seen great defenses who have been in the same scheme a little bit. That goes on. Like, I used to have this. I've had this conversation with like Ray Lewis a little bit. Ed Reed. They'd call a blitz. They could figure. They got to call who they wanted to blitz. Right. They knew the blitz was like, hey, we're going to bring two guys off the weak side. They would fucking break the huddle and be like, hey, you go and you go. And then everybody else kind of knew how to fill in from behind it, right?
Wow.
Yeah. So that, I think they have a little bit of flexibility there according to matchups and whatever else. And I'm sure they go into some of the game with, you know, some sort of thought process from the coaches and all of that. But interesting. He's so good. He's incredible. He really is. Instincts, talent, physical strength, all of it. It's off the charts. The batted ball he had, It might have been a touchdown. It was one of the drives they made the Bills settle for a field goal. He's throwing the ball over the middle. I can't remember if it was Shakir or the running back. Jones got double teamed. He knew he couldn't break it. He kind of got stoned right at the line of scrimmage. So he just went, okay, I'm going to sit here and wait for this big fucker to throw the ball. When he sees it, I'm going to stick up my big hand. And he knocked it down. And it looked like it might have been one of those where like the guy catches it at the one and falls in the end zone. Right? So big moment. Stud. Back to that conversation about studs, right? I want to hit this because, like, this is where the Bills, I love McDermott. I really like Brandon Bean. Stay the course of what they've got. They've done a lot of good things. But, again, like, they have to get some more sizzle on the roster. Again, you know, we talked about Stephon Diggs. I rattled off today a bunch of players. Like, Stephon Diggs is still a number one. Is he still in the top half of football number one? No, he's not. He's not. All right? So let's just start right there. I think if you were realistically going to kind of go into Stephon Diggs, you'd go, yeah, he's somewhere between, you know, maybe 16 and 20-something as far as receivers right now. He's not a superstar elite one. He's a route-running one, and this is not a route-running offense. That's why he was great under Daboll, because from New England, he knew how to – the Edelmans, the Wes Welkers, right? Those type of guys run routes really perfect. I can come up with little plays where you'll – crush the coverage if you run the route the right way. That's where Diggs needs to be in that type of offense. They're running an offense right now that's a little bit like, you know, it's like they have like major heat at receiver, like they're the Bengals, and they're just like, we're going to beat man-to-man and just run by everybody, and Josh, you just throw it deep. And that's not what Stephon Diggs is. But back to what I was getting to is, let's just go, the Chiefs. The offense, I mean, Joe Tooney is All-Pro this year. Creed Humphrey was All-Pro last year, and he's in that conversation, right? Okay, the other guard, Trey Smith, is damn good. But, okay, there's that. Then you got Travis Kelce, all pro, right? Ish, right? We know. Mahomes, lifetime all pro, okay? You know. Then, defensive side of the ball, Chris Jones, all pro. Legarius Sneed, all pro. Trent McDuffie, all pro. Nick Bolton, if he's not hurt for half the year, all pro. You can't say that about the Bills. Josh Allen, all pro. That's it. That's right. And so come on, everybody. Look at the fucking teams a little. I don't know where everybody's like, this is where everybody's at. Like, one, with the criticism with Josh Allen, right? And then two, with just the Bills overall, where everyone just wants to blame McDermott and Josh Allen, I want to go, no. There's an overriding thing here, once again, where, like, you watch the game. Did they talk about a Bills front seven player the whole game?
I didn't see every play. I was in a plane with you when it was happening.
But seriously, I mean, the whole game, other than the first drop back pass of the game, they never even got close to Mahomes. I mean, other than that, it was like, that's what I'm trying to say about the Buffalo Bills and where they need to get a few more killers on their roster.
How dare you use the Big Butt Awards to crush the Buffalo Bills? How dare you? No, I'm glad. I'm glad we got that. I mean, it's true.
Meanwhile, you're going to bury them in a few minutes.
We will have to do that. Congratulations, our Edge Big Butt of the Week is once again my guy. How do I not give it to him? Pete's yelling Homer in my ear. He goes, have you no shame? The fifth of the season for Aiden Hutchinson, fourth straight week. I mean, what? So PFF had him for eight pressures.
You're just going where the game. You're just going with what the game tells you.
Exactly.
Right? You're just watching the game, and it's presenting itself right to you.
If they're going
to
let me run 7 yards a carry, I'm just going to run
7 yards a carry. That's right. I hear you.
He has 17 pressures in the playoffs. Next highest has 11. Eight sacks last four games. He's been incredible. We talked about it last week. We talked about it the week before that. But I the thing is, he's playing his best right now too, which is awesome.
It seems like it. I mean, he's hit a stride. And you know, it's funny when you were talking about this too. I was just like, no edge guy really splashed this weekend. Now that I think about it, there was no dominant edge performance, right? I mean, I think it was clear. I mean, clearly him on the weekend. I can't think of anybody from the Texans-Ravens game that really was popping that way, coming off the edge.
I mean, Nick Bosa, No,
I don't. It's certainly not Bosa. Tampa Bay, nobody on that side of the ball. And in the KC-Buffalo game, I mean, you hit the one guy that was the most disruptive, and that was 95, but he was an interior player.
Are we getting to the point here with Aiden Hutchinson? Because we always talk about who are the best edge in the game. You got Myles Garrett, you got Nick Bosa, you got Micah Parsons there, maybe in the reverse order. Is Aiden Hutchinson the clear four, like top four in the mix there in any order?
I think,
like, who else would it be?
Well, yeah, I think he's right. I mean, you know, I'm gonna go Micah and Miles Garrett,
right? One, right? Two,
then you get into TJ Watt, Max Crosby.
TJ Watt, right? Oops, sorry,
we forgot
that.
It's okay. I knew
ooh, Max Crosby,
you know, right? I think he's right there though. I don't think he's far off that.
He's
group.
Definitely in that group.
I'll say this out of due respect for what they've done. I'd put Micah, Myles Garrett, and TJ Watt in a little bit of their own class.
Okay.
And then I think that next class,
Tier two,
is Max Crosby at the lead of the class by a shoestring in front of Aiden Hutchinson, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, who else am I maybe missing there? A Khalil Mack, a Trey Hendrickson, those type of football guys. And that next little group there. And I know there's some other guys here. I'm just trying not to make this a long, drawn-out conversation. But, yeah, like one of the best defensive players in football. That's not debatable. He's there already.
22 years old still, I think.
22 years
old.
Still
very, very young.
Still growing. I mean, he's still thickening
young
out.
He's a young boy.
Thickening out to be a man. Right? He's probably one of those guys that can definitely go home, eat a sleeve of Oreos, and be like, I still have a six-pack. We don't have that luxury.
He's 23, turns 24 in August, so he's a little older than I gave him credit for. But he is, once again, for sure, we know this, a Big Butt of the Week Award winner for the fifth time this season. Congratulations.
He could get bigger.
You're right.
That's what I mean, see?
Chris Jones, he's looking at Chris Jones over there.
I need to get that to there. I got to get that butt there. I need more Oreos.
Christian's running out of photos for my guy Aiden Hutchinson. But I'll tell you what, if he dominates that 49ers offensive line again, even in a loss, I'm going to have to give it to him again here. Hey, I want to let you know something here, because we're not the only podcast out there. I know some people think that, but more people do podcasts.
I thought we were the only one.
Looking for a little more insight into betting the conference championship games this weekend?
Oh,
our
yeah.
friends of the show, Jay Croucher, Drew Dinsick, have you covered with Bet the Edge. New episodes continuing to drop every weekday through the playoffs at 6 a.m. Eastern. Jay will also be back on Unbuttoned when we're in Vegas, Super Bowl week, so he's going to come on the show.
Yeah.
Give his props, which I know is one of the most popular betting segments we do every
Jay's
year for the Super Bowl.
Jay's the man.
He just always knows like the inside edge and the trends, and he can kind of read it and go, this guy's not getting enough love.
Definitely.
So let's try to be Jay right now. We've got
let's
the Championship that. Sunday rush.
Drew's the man, too.
Yards
like, when
later,
I go on their
right.
show, they know football. They really do. And they are extremely analytical. They play the numbers game more than I do. But when I go on, I always say, oh, that makes me think a little bit or whatever. They always got a few good points. There's no doubt about that. Sorry.
Drew's a seismologist. Is that what he did?
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah. He is.
He studies earthquakes. It's like his actual real job, I feel like.
Yeah.
So here's who's going to get the most rushing yards this week? DraftKings has the odds for us. Christian McCaffrey right now is the favorite, plus 150. Then you have Isaiah Pacheco. Lamar Jackson, third choice, at plus 450. What did he have, 100 yards last week?
Yes.
So right in there.
The
Gus
double,
Edwards.
Triple.
Gus Edwards is next. And then you got the Detroit guys because they do split those carries. Jahmyr Gibbs, plus 800. And David Montgomery, Justice Hill, and then Clyde Edwards-Helaire. No qualms with McCaffrey being number one.
No, no.
So where's
it
the
value? It is, like, funny, though.
Yeah.
I mean, you're the number – what? I mean, were you the number one run defense in football or the number two? Number two run defense in football, you know? So that's kind of funny.
Right.
It wouldn't be what I bet on. I wouldn't bet on that. Like you heard me say – I just think you guys are going to go all in on that. I would be shocked. It is just what you do. So I don't think that. If there's one that I like here, all right, I like Lamar Jackson and I like Jahmyr Gibbs. Those would be the two I like. I just see from what I saw last week, right, how I broke down some of the things before, the Lamar Jackson run game I would think is going to be a part of their offense this week. It was last week. It took them a little while to break it out. When they broke it out, the dam broke on the Texans. I think it's definitely a schematical advantage they have here against the Chiefs. So that would be one I'd look at. And then, yes, you know, I think, you know, I'd go with Jahmyr Gibbs. I would. Against, I think the 49ers – you know, you could put them in a bind a little bit with where they're trying to worry about the play action pass and all that. And I think your O-line is really damn good. Yeah. And as aggressive as they are at times, as attacking the ball and the line of scrimmage, man, you know, I could certainly see what happening the other night. You got Jahmyr kind of gets bottled up. Jahmyr kind of gets bottled up. It's not great. It's 3 yards. It's 2 yards. It's 3 yards. Oh, it's 55 yards like Aaron Jones did the other night.
Yeah.
Right. And that to me is the other reason you got to be a little patient with giving them the football. Right? You can't go, oh, God, 1 yard. We can't give him the ball another time for another quarter and a half. You know, the next one could be 80. You got to give him some touches. He's too dangerous.
Aaron Jones had the most rushing yards last week. Yeah. Lamar Jackson was second. Let's remember this, and let's check our work on this. Because what was it last week? It was the passing yards, and we were talking about who's going to have the least and most passing yards. I think least was Lamar Jackson. That was what the odds said, and he did have the least, 152. The most, I think, was Jared Goff. He finished second to
Baker Mayfield. Right, right. Okay, cool. Yeah, let's see if we can remember.
Let's check our work.
Yeah.
We'll remember.
Check it.
Don't forget on DraftKings Sportsbook this NFL playoffs. New customers can bet $5 and pocket $200 in bonus bets instantly.
Plus, all customers can get a no-sweat same-game parlay every day.
You can download the app, use the promo code UNBUTTON when you sign up.
DraftKings Sportsbook.
The crown is yours. We only have a couple more of those left, I feel like. Do we do those into the offseason, Pete? Do you know? We'll do some. We'll do
it
some.
Never ends, baby. Draft, free agency.
Our sponsors never go away until they do.
Yeah.
And then they never come back. Whatever happened to Under Armour? Remember them? Remember Under Armour? They were here for a long time. They did for a bit. Yeah, Pete, was like a bit.
Yeah,
we still have a hoodie. I got
still have
shoes.
Some Steph Curry sneakers.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. You can't wear them anymore, but we have them. All right, let's finish with our homies' predictions and the requiems here. So we tracked all 1,053 of you who gave your entries and who was going to make the playoffs, what was going to happen. 34% of you have the Chiefs as the AFC winner. 9.5% have the Ravens. So you, me, and Pete all have the Chiefs.
Yep.
9.5%. I think I had the Ravens losing in the – I did. So I had three of the four. I had the Lions. I had the Ravens. I had the Chiefs.
Wow. Yeah, I had three of the four, too. Yeah, I had the Lions. I mean, not the Lions. I had the Chiefs, the Ravens, the 49ers, and just didn't have the Lions.
Mm.
Yeah.
NFC winner, 49% of all people have the 49ers getting there. That's crazy. 50% of all the entries, including you and Pete. 1.4% of the homies have the Lions.
Wow. You're in special company right there.
Well, I don't have them winning.
Oh, yeah. Jeez. Like, what?
I had the Cowboys. I couldn't do it. I was like, I'm going to jinx them if I pick them to win this whole thing.
I mean,
thing.
You picked them to win 56-13 last week, and you didn't even pick them to go to the Super Bowl.
So four homies correctly predicted the final four.
That's amazing.
Wow.
Congrats.
And each has a different Super Bowl pick. So we got Daniel O'Neill has the Ravens over the 49ers.
Okay.
Gentian has the Chiefs over the 49ers. Greg Kuster has the Lions over the Chiefs. And Jack Day has the 49ers over the Ravens.
That's
how about
incredible.
That?
All four different winners, right? A little different
matchups.
So does
someone have to be right there? No, not necessarily, I
well,
guess.
Well, someone's got to be right about who wins.
About who wins, but it could be the wrong matchup.
Yeah.
Okay. I hope someone gets it exactly right.
I do, too. Well, way to go, Daniel O'Neill, Gentian, Greg Kuster, and Jack Day.
We got smart homies out there.
We do.
All right, now it is time to lay these teams to rest. They've died already.
Yeah.
And now we lay them into the ground, you know? And really, people say death is just moving from one phase to another. Yeah. So really, it's not that sad of a time. But the music does make it seem more sad. All right, let me pull them up here. We'll start with the Houston Texans. 11 homies, 1%, had them making the playoffs. So congratulations, you 1%ers out there. That was awesome. No one did predict them to reach the AFC Championship game, and you guys were all right, all 1,000 of us. So here we go. Here lie the Houston Texans. From the start, the team was on a quest to prove they were their division's best. Their quarterback can ball. He excels at it all, except the S2 cognition test. It's the one thing he can't do.
Yeah, he crapped all over that test and that meaning of that thing.
But he still can't do it. Whatever it was, he can be a great quarterback in the NFL, but whatever,
can't do that
he
test.
Can't do that S2 cognition test.
You're
sucked
funny.
At that. So goodbye, Houston Texans. We're excited for you, though, next year. Should be a fun year next
year.
All right, here we go. Buccaneers, 5.4% had them making the playoffs. Three homies had them in the NFC Championship game. So close. Here lie the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. At time, things were bleak, even though they were in it every week. Todd Bowles does look tired, but he won't be fired because he's a certified freak. Bowles in this house, there's Todd Bowles in this house, there's Todd Bowles in the... Certified freak, 7 days a week, yeah. Todd Bowles, yeah. Still around.
Yeah. I know, he's taking a lot of heat for his end of the game, not calling a timeout.
So maybe he will be fired.
I feel bad for him, because really, it's the fact that Dan Campbell and Jared Goff didn't kneel the ball the right way.
I know.
That has added more pressure onto Todd Bowles in the situation
Lions
overall.
Lions screwed it up and made it bad for Bowles. I know. All right, so here we go. The Green Bay Packers. 49% of the homies had them making the playoffs. Wow.
That's higher than I would have expected.
That is higher than I would have thought.
I was one of them.
Four homies had them making the Super Bowl, winning the Super Bowl.
Oh, man.
That's not going to happen.
Not
this year, but you got the quarterback. If he doesn't do that dumb throw like he did at the end of the game. Here lie the Green Bay Packers. In the end, their fans were quite grouchy, sinking in their seats. They got a bit slouchy. But the best news of all is the guy who throws the ball has no opinion on Anthony Fauci. Really doesn't care either way. It's just like, that's the best news.
On fire.
Compass Traveler, who we had earlier in the podcast, wanted to celebrate my Detroit Lions for me. And so there's a long poem. Do we have the actual poem here?
Yep.
There it is right there. I won't read the whole thing. If you're watching on YouTube or Peacock, you can see it here.
Wow.
This is celebratory. Yeah, we should
Read the whole thing. I mean, you can't put the thing up there.
Okay,
you want
here,
me to read it? Can
here
you
it
not read it?
Just a city boy in dreams he's immersed, born and raised where hope's flames burst. Streetlights, people in pursuit of emotion, a team's daring at fourth, a heartfelt devotion. I don't know if I can read the whole thing. There's bigger words than I normally use here. But you can continue it from there. Compass Traveler.
Everybody wants a thrill, rolling the dice. For the championship game, they paid the price.
They
don't
did.
Stop believing. Hold on to that feeling. And Honolulu Blue, a destiny revealing. For Reed, changing red for Honolulu Blue. I can't say that word. A transformation, a vision renewed. Don't stop believing. Attacking with might. A 49ers secondary that may be light.
Ooh, it could be.
Don't stop believing where gold meets the night.
on Amon-Ra's side, where wide receivers take flight in the conference championship game.
Radiant glow.
The team marches on, letting the brilliant show in Hallelujah. I cannot say Hallelujah.
We have found a word that Chris cannot say.
I want to say
Hallelujah. Hallelujah, Honolulu.
I've been there before.
That's a tongue twister right there.
That was like a real poem.
That's a real poem with an actual background and everything. Goff in there pumping his fist.
Where'd he go?
Well done. Thank you. It was an awesome year. I say it as though it's over. They're only a touchdown underdog here. So so hopefully I'll be yeah, exactly. I will be excited watching in the comfort of my home.
Yep.
My son there, my dad'll be there, and so we're gonna enjoy this. Part of me as a Lions fan, I'm like, if we would have lost against the Rams, that would have really sucked.
Yeah.
Because it was like, man, it's such a great year, and we'd go out in the first round.
Right.
And then I felt like if we would have lost against the Bucs, that would have sucked too, because it was like, I really think we should win this game.
Yeah, we're better than
the Bucs. Better than that. If we lose now, that sucks.
Right.
Like here, I'm like, all right, the 49ers are better. It's already been a great year. And I know that's loser talk, but it's just like, if they lose, I won't be devastated.
You won't be crushed.
But here's the other thing too. Like, there's no guarantee, and I think we all know this, right? There's no guarantee that you make it back this far either.
No, I know.
And you are just one win away from the Super Bowl.
You can't make the bet that like Wayne Fonts will be alive.
My $100 are at risk for sure.
Right.
So I'll be going crazy. I'll be super sad if they don't win. And but I'm excited to have this.
Well,
game.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Your team is awesome here, regardless, no matter what.
Yep.
And if your Lions don't win, you know what that means. I'll be super happy that my team won, the 49ers.
Exactly. Yeah. One of us is going to be very happy.
One of us is going to be happy.
Oh, that's good.
I'll be happy even if you guys win, even though I'll be sad, of course, for my friend and the 49ers, certainly. But it's going to be awesome. I can't wait. I mean, are you freaking kidding me? Sunday, Lamar Mahomes in Baltimore. Hasn't been a game there in 71 years as far as championship game.
That's cool.
You know, two MVPs playing each other, both under the age of 30, right? Two-time MVPs. Yeah, I mean, one guy trying to, hey, I want to get to a Super Bowl and show everybody I'm the man, and another guy just going, hey, I'm the fucking man, and you got to beat me because I want to continue to be the man. That's amazing. And then, of course, the 49ers and Lions, just as the teams, the way they play. You know, it's not all about the quarterback. It's a little bit more about the team in general and the way you play around it. And I think it's cool. And I think we're going to see some great matchups on Sunday. So I hope everybody enjoys it.
It's Lamar Mahomes versus Goff and Purdy. Everyone, it's like those names. It's classic matchups.
It is. It's different, but it's what we've kind of been saying about the NFC and the AFC the last few years. The NFC, you know, the top teams are more, hey, we're about the team. Where in the AFC, the top teams are like, hey, our quarterbacks are awesome, and we kind of put the team around them.
It's going to make a great Super Bowl because of that either way.
It will. It definitely would be team versus, you know, the guy, right? And which is can be a cool narrative. But I hope everybody enjoys it. You know, tomorrow's a Thursday Picks Pod, me and Florio, Championship Sunday style. We'll go at it. We'll have a good one there. We'll break down the games and the matchups even further. So please tune in, check us out. You know where to find us on social media. Love some of the questions and the involvement today. Ahmed, good luck to your Lions.
Thanks
so much, as always, for driving the ship here and being so funny, even with that low blow on the Bills. All right, everybody, be good. Enjoy the week. Clap it up.
Clap it up.
Did you know Bridgestone developed a tire using 75% recycled and renewable materials? Making a difference today for future generations. That's what really matters. Bridgestone, solutions for your journey. Visit whatreallymatters.com to learn more.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.